Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listeners. You are here with Getting It Right with Dr. Bowles, and I am extremely happy to be able to be back on the air with you to talk about a subject that I started just a little before Christmas in the month of December 2015, and it has to do with social justice or social injustice. I'm sitting here in Louisiana, and we're having heavy rains with wind, but I understand that is nothing like what's going on in our nation's capital, where they have now called out for an emergency for heavy snows and blizzard-like conditions. So to my fellow citizens in Washington, D.C., I say you should snuggle in, hold tight, stay off the streets, and let's see if we can't weather the storm. Speaking of weathering a storm, I tell you, those black Americans in this United States of America in 2016, and we're saying this is the 21st and 22nd century. Have we gotten there yet? You say 20th all the time. We're in the 21st century. That which plagued us from the beginning continues. And the problem that I'm having in listening to and observing and following all this going on is there seems to be a kind of complacence. We used to in the South talk about the good white folk. And for those of you who have never lived under those kinds of conditions, it means someone who has a conscience. It's generally someone who speaks out to their fellow racists and say, look, don't do that. Or in the days of slavery, those who allowed the slaves to come and get into the Underground Railroad and escape bondage. Those are who we call the good white folk in the United States. Why do I say such things, and if I'm a forward-thinking, progressive professional? Well, looking at what's going on in Flint, Michigan, I'm all stirred up. First, we hear the killings and the police brutalities, and not long after that, suddenly, there is a poisoning of the people in the city. I don't think it was accidental. That was retributional. I think that there is now, unfortunately, a sphere of people in control who are malicious. They are like the slave owners during the days of slavery. They are those who can enjoy the sense of bondage of others, and they have no hesitance perpetrating revenge and hardship against those who may speak out against them. And the sadness that I'm seeing is perhaps those good white folk that once would come to the aid and say, look, that's not civilized or that's not reasonable, now they're silent. I don't know what has silenced them. Maybe it's complacence, maybe it's indifference, I don't know. But when I looked at what's going on recently in Flint, Michigan, for those of you who may not be aware, not up on the current events, there's been a poisoning of the poor and the black people in Flint. Detroit, as you may or may not know, has been going through a financial crisis, and I don't even understand that. Why a city in America can be left to be destitute and not allowed to go bankrupt. They can bail out banks, they can bail out car dealerships, but when it came to the city of Detroit, the world backed away. So here we are, a city that was struggling financially, that has been revealed to be very racist in their policing. Now a decision was made to reroute water source. Now, if you may or may not know, in the vicinity of Detroit, Michigan, are the Great Lakes. That's pure, nice, clean water. Well, they didn't go to that. They went to a nearby river and brought water into Flint, Michigan. And as you may suppose, the pipelines as well as the source of water, keep in mind that Detroit was an industrial city some years ago, just like Pittsburgh, and it had a lot of car dealerships, which means there was a lot of industrial refuge. Unfortunately, EPA has never been that tight on some of the big industries, so it does not surprise me if you say some of the reservoirs or rivers which have a slow influx of fresh water or a very little influx of fresh water would have in their mud and sludge heavy loads of toxins. Toxins left over from the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, right up, I'm sure, until the year 2000. Well, they rerouted water from one of these resources, and immediately people started to complain to the mayor, to the governor, board is not clean. There's something wrong with this water. And they chose to ignore it. Now, the ignoring it is the part that I accuse them of being retribution. That they're saying, okay, if you're going to speak out and ask for justice, we're going to poison your children, we're going to maim your pregnant women, and we're going to show you what happens when you're not in line with our thinking. Because they had this monumental stack of emails, just like Hillary Clinton when they went after her. And these emails, there were all kinds of complaints. There were Congress and senators saying their constituents were complaining. There were people coming to council meetings with this dirty water in gallon jar buckets to show, here's what you're sending to our homes to drink. Well, it wasn't until late 2015 when the officials decided, yeah, this is probably a public health emergency. It's heavy lead poisoning. There are people measuring, saying that the lead levels that was being in Flint had been outlawed since 1980. That's right, folks. There was this big campaign in the United States to get rid of any kind of lead poisoning. I can tell you I know it because I was a student in clinical student. That's medical school. I was in medical school in 1985. And they hired a bunch of us to go out and literally scrape paint from the sides of buildings. This is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I later did it when I was also in New Orleans. They sent us into areas because I had the certification. And we scraped paint on sides of the wall. We picked up dirt on the edge of the road. We went into schoolhouses and did various things. And why? We were trying to determine if those places were contaminated with lead. And there had been this major decision. If there were lead, they trained people to know how to go in and remove lead-contaminated paint surfaces. They trained them on how to cover or seal lead-covered surfaces. So as 30 years ago, 36 years ago, it was known lead is bad. Children particularly, why? Because lead causes retardation. Lead can kill cells in the brain. Lead can make bones soft. Lead can replace iron in the blood. And if you didn't know, blood is a hemoglobin compound, meaning iron-driven, oxygen-carrying compound. So if you replace the iron with lead, you don't carry oxygen. And what happens if you don't have oxygen? Well, you get cramps in your body. You feel nauseated. You get headaches. You can get blindness. So nothing about lead was found to be good when it's introduced in the body. It will deposit around the teeth in the gum line. It can even deposit on the nail bed. You can see the edge of the nail bed because those are the ways, as a young physician, we were taught to examine to see if there were possible lead deposits in children and others. Well, you're going to tell me that in 2015, with all of that knowledge of how bad lead can be, there was this group in Michigan, it happens to be Flint, Michigan, that allowed the water to flow for more than 10 months. And they ignored, literally ignored. And now EPA is charging that the tests that were run were intentionally, intentionally run to give a lower concentration of lead. And you say, well, what are you talking about, Velva? Where do you get this? Well, I read the papers, and what the EPA said, that before every test for lead, they would pre-flush the line. Now, I tell you, when a child goes into the kitchen or into the bathroom to get a glass of water, he doesn't know to pre-flush the line. He's going to turn it on, he's going to catch it, and he's going to drink it. But when they measure to say what hazard it is to that child, they let the water run long enough to move on any kind of accumulation of lead, and then test it. Wow. The newest thing that gets my attention is they tell the people, well, they don't have trust. We've gone back to the original Detroit water sources, but we're telling them to boil the water. And I smile. Boiling doesn't do anything for lead. If you have a bacterial contamination, they call it a coliform bacteria, usually it's stool or something from the sewage system, and you boil it for 3 minutes, most of the bacteria will be killed. There's some spore agents that may or may not be killed due to boiling. But to tell someone to boil the water when the problem is a heavy metal, lead, is absolutely ridiculous. It would make more sense to come into homes and fit every one of the homes with a filtering device and change them monthly until they get the problem under control. But no, they just simply said, well, we are back to Detroit. You need to trust this now. The water's okay. Wow. There is a mayor of Flint, black female, who happened to be at the White House for reasons I didn't catch, some kind of a conference. And she states, well, this would not have happened if the people were not poor. And that's kind of like Captain Obvious. Yeah, we know that, because the first time it smelled bad, looked bad, tasted bad, it would have been a major issue. And now when you have possibly tens of thousands of children affected for life. Do you hear me, folks? Once lands in the system, it's a heavy metal. It incorporates into the bone marrow, and it can be released depending on your health status. If you were pregnant and you consumed for 10 months or any part of your pregnancy this contaminated water, you can have a baby, an in utero growing child exposed to lead. Are there studies on this? Absolutely, because I can take you back down my memory lane. I was in a biochemistry lab in 1974 and 5, something, maybe 1973, and they were looking at the effects of heavy metal on animals. They were using mercury as their primary heavy metal, because mercury is a problem with the fishing industry. And if you love salmon and you eat wild salmon, you can get a good load of mercury. It was happening that some of the farmers were using mercury on their seed product, because when they were storing a seed like corn to plant the following year, of course, this is before Monsanto got in control of everything, they would have problems with rats and mice and other animals getting into their seed stock. So they started using mercury to process the seed so that these vermin, if they ate the poisoned seed, they would not prosper. Well, I don't know how it happened, but some of this poisoned seed got into the food chain, whether it was a hog ate it, and then we ate the hog, or if some very poor people got into the seed and ate it, or whether it was a malicious act, I don't know. But what they found is that when human consumption of mercury, they had high miscarriage rates. They had a form of what we refer to as dementia. They had all kinds of skin dysplasias, and that got called to the attention of the authorities, and there was some NIH monies, and like most state universities, North Carolina State University launched a study. And I happen to have been in a lab that was looking at how do you remove excess heavy metals once it has been ingested. There was also information that part of the agricultural world in fattening pigs for market, they would feed them an increased diet with copper. And this copper increase facilitated rapid weight gain, and it would get the animal to market sooner. The only catch is, the liver, as in our bodies, would scavenge or remove this excess copper. And because the liver of calves and cows and pigs is part of the food chain for humans, there was alarm bells. How can we get this excess copper out of the liver before we go to market with these rapidly fattened agricultural livestock? And part of the university's charters were to study what does it take to remove heavy metals and unwanted metals from tissue. And that particular process was called chelation. And it was all kinds of compounds that you could feed an animal. I mean, EDTA in the feed could facilitate leaching or chelating a certain amount of copper out of the liver of a fatted pig. And they knew how long to feed it and how much to feed it before they took this animal to market, such that the liver tissue now could be sold, and it met FDA or whomever's inspection as to the level of copper. With that information, there is a form of chelation for certain heavy metal poisonings. I've not seen or heard of. I think Mayo Clinic in Ohio at one time, especially in the 90s, had a very aggressive program to remove lead from the environment, And I think they may have developed or worked on a chelating process for children or perhaps mill workers or persons exposed inadvertently through leaded gasoline residuals or leaded paint residuals and so forth. But that's not been in any kind of medical literature for a very long time because we've known for 30 years you don't expose children and pregnant women and the feeble to any kind of heavy metal, whether it's mercury or lead or copper. And bingo, in 2015, none of this knowledge seems to be in the heads of those in control of the water supply for Flint, Michigan. When they needed more money and they figured this is a cheaper way, well, maybe it was cheaper because no one else wanted it. You know, things we throw away are usually cheap. We threw it away. It has no value. So the reason they were not drawing water from that river to start with is because the water from that river was not to be consumed. Wow, that wasn't difficult. Well, just to give you more data, late in 2015, officials finally declared a public health emergency, and I think I heard about it right around Christmas that they were saying there had been these extremely large quantities of lead and that there had been a possible, I love this, hedging conversation, possible exposure of children and whomever else in the area to this outside of the limit lead load that was perpetrated by the officials in the state of Michigan in their decision to give a specific neighborhood of Flint this particular poisoned water. There was a call out to see how long has the state governor known that there was a problem, and it seems there's a mammoth load of emails and letters from various senators telling them that there was a problem. It's also a record that a hospital in Flint reported that the water was so corrosive or foul that it was damaging instruments in the hospital. Now let's pause for a minute. An instrument, that's an inanimate object, and water going through the hospital instrumentation was damaging the instrument. And a university, they didn't name the university, also found reason to say the water was damaging something within their facility, and these two institutions had the money, had the wherewithal, put in their own filterings of the water and went to drinking bottled water. Now, these were what I would consider the gateway keepers of any city. If there is a hospital, the hospital, if nowhere else, should be the alarm bell. They, to me, are the rescuers. They take in the diseased and the sick. If they found the problem and they begin to reckon with the problem in a certain way, why was this not an alarm? Why, if the hospital finds the water unsuitable, it's not now known as unsuitable for all? Why, if our higher institution of learning has discovered a problem with the water that the masses are consuming, why was there not a mass shout-out? Why was there not a mass rescue? These are two institutions, guard dogs, if you like, protectors of the people. And when they found the water foul, they corrected it for themselves and nothing else. See, this is what I'm talking about, listeners, when I say there's kind of this complacency. There is this silent acceptance. You know, it was at one time there would be a people's outcry that we don't stand for this. You know, why have a few extreme things hijacked America? Why do you have the tomfoolery of Trump and have him leading as a possible president? I spoke to a friend recently and said, I remember when I was in high school and then into college how Jerry Lewis was so popular among the French because they saw him very buffooning. And I personally could not enjoy watching him with all the face expression, the white socks and the behavior, but they found it amusing. I now look at this so many years later and say, well, the world has reason again to see us in this tomfoolery situation. We have Trump is like Jerry Lewis to me. He has this bizarre presentation. He's a man of money, and he couldn't go to Bosley and get his hair done. He wears a wig that can fly up in the wind and be made fun of. That just seems strange to me. If you can afford it, why aren't you having the best? Why not weave that hairpiece down so that it can't be discovered? Or better yet, have a stylist do something to make it less obvious to those of us who are amateurs in our observation. I don't know. But somehow America's been hijacked by the practical jokers, by the silly thinkers, by the comical and not the serious. Going back just to consider, is it just in the domestic scene that the Americans are losing their grip? No. The kind of disregard of health and prosperity of black-skinned people is not just domestic. Dr. William Thompson was reported right there at the end of 2014. He was considered a whistleblower. And for those of you who don't know what that means, it's someone who comes forth to tell the truth against a institution that they were part of. It's like watching somebody do dirt so long, you say, I can't stand this anymore. And instead of simply retiring or resigning, you go forth and tell the story. Well, this is what William Thompson did. He was working with the Center for Disease Control, and he came forth under the Obama administration, who gave him whistleblowing status, meaning he's protected against prosecution. He reported that a very prominent article published in the Journal of Pediatrics in 2004 was all a series of lies, that he and his colleagues had deliberately altered the data, that the real truth is that children who got vaccines before the age of 36 months, and for those who are a little slow, that's 3 years old, and when do we give all of our vaccines? Well, as a pediatrician, I'll tell you, all of the vaccines are mandatory in the United States of America for children before the age of three. In fact, within the first few days of life, they get a vaccine of hepatitis B. And by the time they're 18 months old, they've probably had, I'd say 10 to 15 vaccinations, unless they were either a premature baby or have some kind of leukemia. And by the time they're three, they've easily had 30 shots of some form of vaccination. Well, his report is children who are vaccinated before the age of three, that means all American children whose parents are mandated to do so, run the risk of autism. And that risk has been calculated to be 69%. Now, there was this huge, huge congressional hearing in the early 90s because some senator's child developed autism, and then they uncovered that some pharmaceutical magnate refused to let his grandchildren get the same vaccine that he had gone to Congress and told them all children must have. And there was some big payout to the rich to cover the allegation and later the proof that autism had been caused by this vaccination. Then it got hushed up. We everyday people are not supposed to know, and as William Thompson showed us, they're willing even to lie. And they fudged the data, published it in the Journal of Pediatrics, and continue to tell the world and children of America, you got to get your shots. Well, autism was increased by 69%, and that shouldn't be anything newsworthy because autism incidence, from what I understand, has gone from 1 in 15,000 in 1960s to 1 in 150 in 2005. Now, it may even be an incident greater than 1 in 150. I haven't been keeping up on the autistic statistics recently. Now, we need a drum roll because they found that in black children, black American children, the risk of autism with vaccinations is 240%. Now, when you find that kind of data, that usually launches all kinds of studies. You know, why? Why is incidence so much greater in black children? What can we do to ensure this doesn't happen? But guess what? There was no such study launched. an increased risk of autism in black children didn't matter here in the United States. Not only did it not matter, but the very fact that vaccinations are linked to autism was covered up, hidden in these United States of America. Well, if that's not sobering enough, there was also a report in 2015 by Dr. Wonyi Nwagra. He is in Nigeria, he's in Kenya, and he's working with the World Health Organization. And he and his team uncovered that there had been an antigen introduced in a vaccine that had been given to 2.3 million girls, females on the African continent. Now, why is that plausible worthy? These vaccines were donated by the World Health Organization and UNICEF. Yes, good old American UNICEF. The vaccine's intent that they voiced was to protect these persons from measles and other types of deadly infections, when in fact it contained an agent intentionally placed in the vaccine, which caused miscarriages. Now, I heard all kinds of allegations of genocide. And I have a friend who has dedicated a lot of time looking at Depo-Provera. But when you are intentionally introducing an antigen, now if you don't know what an antigen is, if I want your body to become sensitized, for instance, like in a flu vaccine, they introduce an antigen which looks a lot like the flu virus. And they introduce that antigen because they want your body to become smart. It recognizes this antigen, and it kind of recruits soldiers, if you like, recruits these immunocytes. So when the real flu comes along, it doesn't have a chance because your body is already armed to fight it. That's the theory behind it. Well, if you introduce an antigen in a vaccine that causes the body to fight pregnancy, any female that had been introduced with this antigen that builds an army against that antigen, when she gets pregnant, this army will abort the child. Yeah. So it's willing, knowingly, intentionally setting up an abortion. And then I look at all the outcry, right to life and anti-abortion stuff going on in the United States. And at the same time, the United States is sponsoring vaccines which abort children. I don't even know how to react to that kind of hypocrisy that we yell out and speak out how this isn't the way it is. And while nobody's watching, at least when they think nobody's watching, they're doing the very thing that the outcry is saying should not happen. So, just to continue, now that we have information, the United States has, in fact, a very institutionalized process of racism. Let's take a moment and say, okay, Velva, you've given us a pretty good evidence, but isn't that sort of reaching out? There's an incident in Flint. Okay, so internationally they're trying to control the birth rate of black people. Well, I'm going to bring it back home. You see, here in America, there's been the erosion of the pretense of the American melting pot. We used to want to wave a banner and say, bring us your downtrodden, and we will have all this, and America the free. But that's not true. Just take a look at modern mainstream happenings. Look at how many mainstream practices of just very offensive comments, and they come on and they apologize and keep right on moving, like the apology was enough, that all I had to say is, sorry, I didn't mean to call you the N-word, sorry, I didn't mean to imply, and they keep moving. And the insults that people of color are having to endure and tolerate, now there's no good white people out there cleaning it up. They're not calling their colleagues on it. They're just sort of standing by and looking. And I tell you, I warn you, that it is the sum total of these multiple microaggressions by whites to blacks here in America that has pervasive effect to the stability, I guess I should say instability, but stability of peace all through the world. And with that, I thank you so much for listening. And until next time, take care.